We were just speaking about manifesting headaches, Ryan, and how I was in several instances in my life able to manifest a headache. And I think I did that for myself and for you with this current topic that we are going to be talking about. Ryan, if I had to ask you if you can remember the single most awful movie that you've seen in a theater that you had to pay money to go see, what would it be?
You're asking me something that goes back to the very origins of Mars on life, and I'm glad I have an answer. Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker.
Really? That's the worst theatrical experience you've ever had?
Well, it's not the experience itself was great. Just because it was Christmas, like it literally was on Christmas, and my family and I needed something to do. Plus, I was working near the movie theater, the AMC theater in Burbank, so it was all perfect. It was just the movie itself that I was like, this is how they're ending Star Wars? This is how. What was it by that point? 40 years of history, the Skywalker saga, this is how it all ends, with Palpatine somehow being back, and the last Skywalker isn't dying because he's an evil bastard. It's a Palpatine just being like, oh, Skywalker now.
Okay, so for me, the answer is the movie that we're going to talk about today. It is the 2014 sci-fi thriller, I guess you would call it, called Lucy by Luc Besson. And I wonder if like he named or if it would did he write the movie? I'm not sure, but Lucy, Luke, is he trying to like self-insert himself into Scarlett Johansson there? But no, it the single-handedly the worst theatrical experience I've ever had. Like, I even went to see it at one of those discount movie theaters. There was one in North Hollywood that's a second-run theater, so like $3 to go see it, a movie, whenever. And if it's like a Tuesday, it was $1.50. So even then, like the $3 my family each paid to go see this movie, and I didn't pay it. My parents paid it for me. The $3 we paid to go see this movie was not good. It was not worth that $3 that we paid. It was not worth the, what is it, like two something hours that we, or it was like an hour and a half, I
Yeah,
think,
it was
right?
90 minutes. I was
The
surprised.
hour and a half we sat to watch it. I think the only thing that was worthwhile about that experience, I think it was this day, is that as we were leaving, we saw that our grandma had gone to see the same movie without us. Like separately. We just ran and was like, wait, you're here too? Oh my God. But no, it was the single-handed like worst movie I've ever seen in a theater. I just sat there and like probably also one of the single-handedly worst movies I've seen in general. I just sat there staring at the screen and it's just like, this is so fucking stupid. Like the fact that this got greenlit and the fact that money and resources were devoted to making this dumpster fire of a movie just gives me no faith in the cinematic virtue of Hollywood sometimes, and just like investors and art in general. It's like you already had Limitless, which already did this concept of unlocking your brain, which Limitless did it well. Limitless was
Yeah.
such a good movie. I loved Limitless.
I
It
like
was
it.
really good. And then 3 years later, you have this dumpster fire, which is just, it doesn't explain anything about itself. It's just like, I'm Luc Besson. I am French. This is art. You will like it.
Yeah, I so he did write it. I think was it co-written?
God
No,
damn the French.
he as Ian McKellen says in The Da Vinci Code, the French should not be trusted. But I'm looking over just his Wikipedia page,
He did
and
Leon the Professional, which was good. He's
yeah,
done Fifth
I like The
Element, which I've
Professional a
never
lot.
seen, but everyone loves.
And The Fifth Element, which, you know what, take it or leave it, was I like a big fan of The Fifth Element, no, but yeah. I'm glad it exists. I'm glad it was made. It's fun. It's different. It's wacky. But the thing that I walked away with this movie, well, two things. One, this movie is so bad that I forgot. Well, I knew I had seen it, but I had forgotten where I had seen it. I wasn't sure if I had, like, recorded it on TV at some point in the last almost 10 years since it's been out, which is weird to consider. But it was the fact that last time I had seen it was so bad. The other night when I went to Netflix to remove it from my list and also give it a thumbs down
Oh, I also gave it a
review,
thumbs down.
I didn't have to do that because there was already a thumbs down there. Because I'm thinking, where have I seen Lucy before? Where have I seen Lucy? It was on Netflix.
Hate that it's in like it's under new releases, but it's also like in hot top 10 right now. It's like
Yeah.
it's not good. You people should not be watching it. We're only watching it because we're masochists. And
We
Ryan
are.
asked me about watching a bad film and reviewing it, and I said, "Oh, I've got the worst film for you." And I suggested this. And I hate myself for it. I've manifested a headache because of it. Like I watched it on Tuesday night. We're recording this on Thursday. Watched it on Tuesday night, got to the point where she's on the airplane, fell asleep, tried rewinding it, watching it back again, fell asleep again. Last night tried watching it again, fell asleep again, tried watching it back again, and fell asleep. It's just like even during the quote unquote action sequences, it's so mindless to the point where it's not mindless fun. It just dulls your mind to the point of putting you to sleep because there's nothing going on here. It's a movie that doesn't explain itself. It wastes its actors. Like I don't know what Scarlett Johansson is doing. I don't particularly like her as an actor. I don't
Neither
think
do
she
I.
has I don't think she has very good range, really. I think she also takes roles she should not, hence Ghost in the Shell, hence there's that other movie she did that everyone got mad at. But also it's like, what is she doing in this movie when she's like Brainiac Lucy? Is she like pretending to be autistic? Because
I
like
haven't
her eyes
seen.
point in different directions and she just kind of stares at people like she doesn't understand social cues. That's what I'm like, are you being autistic right now? Is that how you're trying to portray this character? Is that you're using autism as your crutch, or like just she just doesn't seem like she understands what's going on around her, which is why I'm not making fun of autistic people, I swear. It's just that like that's the kind of impression that I think I felt like she was manifesting. Like you're trying to like be in a room with one of those like autistic geniuses who like clearly is smarter than you, but doesn't know how to like deal with you. Like she goes up to this guy and it's like. She's like, "Oh, prove to me that you've got these powers. Oh, your child died horrifically, and it was in a blue car." And it's like, "Holy fuck!" That to talk about having no social cues. You could have said something like, "You were born this day. I know your name. I know your social security number. I know everything about you. I know where you live. Don't bring up the
Yeah.
fact that his child fucking died."
This was of the age where, because I had to think about it last night when I did see it, where I'm like, okay, when did this come out? 2014. Okay.
2014.
This was
We were in
around
college.
several, yeah, I was in college for this too. And I, you know, I remember the trailers for it. And initially when I did see those trailers, I thought, because this was around that. There's so many layers with where Lucy fits in the sort of 2010s cinematic slash television slash screenwriting slash whatever discussion, where it was at that time where filmmakers were obsessed with this idea of just kind of like new realities and combining things that involved either dreams or nature, or I'm blanking because it's already been a long week. Basically, this idea, in some ways, it's like carrying on what that awful Johnny Depp movie that was directed by
Oh,
Transcendence, which was directed by
yep.
Christopher Nolan's cinematographer, hence why that guy didn't do Interstellar. And that was part of why I wasn't a fan of Interstellar, was that they didn't have, what's his name, Wally Pfister. I was like, where you go? And
He was fisting Johnny Depp.
it was that whole period where It's like talking about how intelligent humans can be and integrating new things into their bodies so that they can be, stronger, better, whatever. But then it's also of the era, and this kind of goes to your point where the awkwardness of her character. This is like the most wooden performance I've seen since Hayden Christensen in Attack of the Clones. She's so awkward, and her lines are so stilted.
He
And
literally
I.
just stares off and delivers the lines to no one in particular.
Yeah, I mean, for crying out loud, I don't understand how. Like, the whole. Here's the thing. I'll say this before I get to my point about its sort of position in entertainment at that time. I love the concept of the movie itself. I would love it if it was like an episode of Black Mirror or Love, Death, and Robots or something. I think the concept itself is the thing that always draws me back to that movie. And I've only
But
seen
then
it
you can
like.
just watch Limitless instead.
Right. I know. I mean, and the thing is, I've only seen Lucy twice because the first time I was like, ooh. And then I saw it. And, again, I didn't see it in theaters. I didn't ever had it
How
on
does it
DVD.
sound?
But it just was so bad that I thought you guys need to cut so much of this if you want to make it any better. But it's also just the fact that I don't believe Scarlett Johansson in the role, and it just goes off of the stilted performance. I don't understand how I can believe Arnold Schwarzenegger as a cybernetic organism just talking like a robot like this, and yet Scarlett Johansson just giving like techno babble, and this is where it gets into my larger issue with Lucy and its placement in time. I feel like this was at the tail end of the era where films and television wanted to have that really socially awkward super genius that could
You mean
just
every role that Jesse Eisenberg has ever played?
that, but also it's riding on the coattails of stuff like Sherlock. And Stephen Moffat was also, created Sherlock, wrote it, and his era of Doctor Who was going on during that same time period, where you've got this uber genius who is so socially awkward, and yet they're so smart that they're able to thwart like dozens of people, if not hundreds of people, and those people just roll along with it because they realize, I've been outsmarted by this smart person. And Lucy tries to do that, but the problem is when you're going up against what, the Korean mafia, like
I also
what are
love how
you
you
gonna
never
do?
understand a word that they're saying because they don't even deign to give you the subtitles of what they say, which could be an artistic choice. Like it makes them seem more menacing because you don't know what they're saying, and other but it also otherizes them as just like the hapless Asian mooks that get murdered. But also, so what you're saying is that the British are to blame for this French atrocity?
In some ways, I mean, there were other programs at that time that definitely relied on that subject, but I mean, like I said, you had Sherlock, you had Doctor Who, Showtime briefly had a series called Da Vinci's Demons, which was essentially what if Leonardo da Vinci was young, hot, Doctor Who without a TARDIS, and he slept with all the hot ladies of Florence and somehow found his way to the New World with his young teenager friend. Niccolo Machiavelli. I mean, it's this kind of thing that, and no one really questions it. Even Morgan Freeman, like, he's not like, I don't believe you when you say that you're the smartest lady on earth. Like, there's none of that. It's literally he just rolls with it because she keeps like outsmarting him every time. And I think I've just grown so tired of that kind of character where you're dealing with an incredibly smart person, but you're a genius for some reason and you outsmart them for comedic effect, but it's written so dry that it's like, okay, I get it, you're smart.
It's like I hate that watching that kind of character because it's not someone I would want to put up with in real life. So why do I want it on my TV show? It's like why I never really got into like Big Bang Theory or like Young Sheldon
That's
because
another good example. Perfect,
I would
yeah.
hate dealing with people like that in my daily life. Like, I don't want to see smart-ass young Sheldon like on my screen when I could be watching something that I enjoy. It's like the character ruins any other potential like good things about the show. Like, for example, like this is not quite the same kind of character, but like everyone kept telling me that I needed to watch Steven Universe. And like, I appreciate the artistry of that show. I appreciate the diversity of it. I appreciate what they do with the music, how like each character has their own musical theme and is tied to an instrument. I appreciate all of that. But for fuck's sake, I cannot stand Steven as a character. He is in, like, people are like, you have to get through the first season and he gets better. It's like, I don't care. I don't want to watch a season of this insufferable fuck. Like, he's so annoying. He like fucks everything up. His dad's a layabout who does nothing but live in his van all day. Like, why do I care about these people? I would watch a show just about the Crystal Gems. Fine. I don't give a fuck about Steven. Get him off my show and I will watch it. But like, if I have to put work into either appreciating or being invested in, like, I can hate the main character, but watch the show because they're like fun to hate. No, Steven's not fun to hate. I'm not invested in hating him. He just annoys the fuck out of me.
No, The Big Bang Theory, that was another show. I thought of it earlier and my tired ass brain forgot about it. But you're right. Like there is a little bit of an element of that, but I think as well what the movie's trying to go for with just the thing that kept bothering me, and it was something that I
Was
remember.
everything?
The what?
Thing that kept bothering you was everything?
Exactly. I mean, what I'm about to mention happens, what, like every 20 seconds of the movie is it's intercut with footage from like planet Earth.
He's trying
And
to be so artistic. It's so heavy-handed that this is an art film, which is that's another thing I was going to bring up, but you brought it up right now. It's like, okay, I cut you off. Keep going, and then I will bring back to my point.
okay.
I cut you
Well,
off. My bad.
I'll just say as well that when it comes to its implications, and this is something that I both praise and criticize about it, because if you're trying to have a story that talks about the broader issue of humanity's placement within nature and what it means to be the most intelligent species on the planet. But obviously, the whole point of the movie is, what happens if that intelligent species gets even more intelligent? Great, fine. But you
We get
don't need to be
superpowers.
like, here's cheetahs chasing each other, or here's a monkey picking a fly out of another monkey's ass, or here's a whale, or, the whole scene at the end where she's like going through time and all of a sudden this really chicken-looking dinosaur like charges at her and she's like, nope, change of channel, and she goes back another.
It
Several.
makes no sense. It's so off the rails.
It's just, it's like, I get it. You're trying to talk about what it would mean if humanity transcended its intelligence to such a point, that like it becomes a god amongst beasts, but it's just banging you over the head with it, and you're like, I don't understand how I'm supposed to take this seriously when you got all this like matrixy techno music that doesn't really feel appropriate for a movie in 2014, or is this just, oh, I'm trying to be hello, I'm trying to be artistic with my music, and everyone likes the electronic music, it's gonna be great.
Yeah.
It's turning into Arnold, I'm sorry, but
I mean, it again, it wanted to bang you over the head with the fact that it's a piece of art. It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but what it reminded me of was there's this avant-garde film I had to watch in class about film auteurs. It was called Koyaanisqatsi, and it's like that for it's just the inner cuts of everything. Like I didn't mind the film. I don't typically like avant-garde film. I think it's just not my style. I appreciate that it pushes the boundaries of film, and is later eventually incorporated into techniques that filmmakers use. Fine, that's fine. It's just not for me. But like Koyaanisqatsi, I didn't mind just because it was kind of visually interesting. But the way Luc Besson takes it, though, it wants you to know that it's art so fucking bad, and he wants you to know that he's an artist with a capital A so fucking bad that It becomes laughable and ridicule. Like, there's a point of ridicule because it's like there's artists who make films, and they don't have to tell you that it's art. You just know it. Hayao Miyazaki, as bad as The Boy and the Heron was, that movie was art with a capital A.
I haven't heard any
Oh,
reviews for it. That
it's
surprises me.
terrible. It sucks.
Oh.
The story is god awful. It's beautiful to look at. Go watch it just because this might be the last thing we ever see from him. And
Right.
it looks good, but the story is absolute shit. It takes too long to get started. It doesn't make sense. It's like you're watching a fever dream. Story is shit. It tries to do too much with itself. I think as a part of this potentially being Miyazaki's final time that he retires. But like the movie, you know it's art. You can tell he doesn't have to tell you.
Yeah.
He just does what he does, and you know it's art. Wes Anderson. You go into that movie expecting something beautiful and artistic. There it is. You get it. He doesn't have to tell you, "Hi, this is art." Even though he tends to do that sometimes, he didn't have to, because you already know. Luc Besson is telling you it's art, and it's like, okay, sure, buddy, go play with your crayons. Don't eat them. Don't eat them. You're not a marine. Don't eat your crayons. But I think for me, like, this had the makings of an interesting film because he's done. He did Taken. He did the Taken series. That was
Oh,
Luc
yeah.
Besson for some. He wrote them at least. I don't know if he directed them, but his IMDb says that he wrote them. So this movie had the beginning of like a fun action flick, but then when it gets all sci-fi and nonsensical, it's like, stop. This is so stupid. And then you get to the ending. The ending was the worst bit of this for me because it's like, why the fuck does she turn into a USB drive? And also, she ends it with like quoting back to the front of the movie where it's like, somehow, some billion years ago, life was given to us. Now you know what to do with it. No, I don't. You never answered the question. You never answered your own goddamn question. You said something pithy at the end and expected it to be like some kind of like, oh, this is so profound. No, it's that Nolan effect where you're so far up your own ass that you think you can do these things, but you just can't, Nemo.
Well, and I think that's where that movie Transcendence comes back into the picture, where it makes me wonder, because I'm rewatching the movie, it did remind me of my problem, probably one of my biggest problems, and I only have problems with this movie, is just simply the fact that, it has that typical 2010s sci-fi movie or just sci-fi story feel, which, it's not something that is just specific to sci-fi in the 2010s, but I noticed it more and more to the point where I'd go back to older sci-fi and think, okay, no, this is actually something that has a history. It's just that nowadays people are obsessed with doing it. When I say nowadays, I mean the last 10 years, where it becomes this, like, nihilistic self-sacrifice that is also, even though it's nihilistic, it's so self-obsessed where it's like, I'm gonna turn myself into the greatest piece of technology ever, and now it's up to you to do something about it. The movie Transcendence, out of everything wrong with that movie, because that movie's terrible too, everyone wanted it to be basically the next Inception. And then they realized they weren't dealing with anybody, like anybody that creative with Inception, other than literally the cinematographer. That was where the creativity started and ended, excluding the performances. And I think Morgan Freeman was even in that too. But Transcendence shows you what happens when the main character becomes so damn smart because they turn into a computer. And it's devastating in a Terminator 3 kind of way, where it's like there's nothing we could have done. He's decimated humanity. He's taken over the whole, computer interface of the planet, and he basically is the computer interface. With this movie, she just becomes a flash drive.
And she's everywhere
And apparently
somehow.
she's everywhere. And you're like, what does
I
this
also,
mean?
I don't understand her superpowers though. It's like you got drugs in your system, which, like, first off, how did that not kill you? And it's just like it's this nebulous, poorly defined drug that, like, apparently mothers make when they're like getting their babies in their belly and getting ready to survive in the real world, whatever. But also, there is a drug in your system that is like pretty much a concentrated synthetic version of this neurotransmitter, and it's just leaking into you. And somehow that activates more of your brain, which is scientifically not accurate. We're using all of our brain. It's just redundancies and backup systems so that if you bonk your head, you don't immediately conk out and die.
Yeah.
So.
Luc Besson watched that Simpsons episode and was like, "What if I took what Bart Simpson said and took it to the next level?" You know, or
And it's
Bart, I think he
like,
says something like, "You know how humans only use 10% of their brain power? I don't know, he says something to the effect of like, you know, I'm gonna be one of them," or something like that. And it's just like,
it's like I don't get how, because you can use more of your brain, you're able to, one, read people's thoughts, two, make them pass out, three, get telekinesis, four. Well, also, she's not even using like any of her brain power at the beginning when she starts floating.
yeah.
Floating, controlling radio waves, time travel, phasing in and out of things, goop powers.
Changing her hair, changing her appearance.
None of that is like, at least with, again, like back to Limitless, which did this concept in superior fashion. In every possible way. It's like he accesses more of his brain and it just makes him smarter. That's literally all it does. He's able to learn better, able to access information, able to recall it, able to apply it better. His brain just works better. And it's not anything that's like so unbelievable that it couldn't, like, you would have to really suspend disbelief. You have to, like, the disbelief in Lucy is so suspended that like it's above the ground at Empire State level building, and a slight breeze will snap those suspenders and you'll plummet to your belief death.
Well, again, I feel like this could be a really good like Black Mirror story, but you know, to your point about the
But it's
fact
too
that it's,
long. It just goes too long and too far
yeah.
off the rails.
And well, and the
Even
fact
for
that,
speculative fiction, it goes too off the rails.
well, the whole drugs aspect, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm one of those people now where I don't need a backstory to everything. You know, I'm sick to death of getting explained every little detail.
Godzilla minus one doesn't explain the backstory, which helps
Yeah.
it.
Like literally all you need to know is that okay, there's a monster on this island and then the bombs, the atomic bombs, and then by that point there really wasn't a whole lot of testing except in the United States. Thanks, Oppenheimer. But you basically get the idea that that version of Godzilla is more or less a creation of the bombs from either Hiroshima or Nagasaki, you know, and then later on I think Sebastian made the point, you know, the testing at the Bikini Atoll, like that was basically what led to the original Godzilla for most of the franchise. And but with this one, with minus one, it's like, oh, he's just there. He just looks like he's not even a mutated dinosaur. You don't know. That's the thing is, you don't know what he is. He's just a legend of Odo Island,
He's
which,
just Gojira.
by the way, good callback to the first movie, because the first time you see Godzilla in the original is they're on Odo Island, and then a big puppet just leans up over the hillside and just, you know, nah. So it was nice to not have to have a full origin of like, okay, we get why he's a big, thick boy, big wet boy when he, you know, destroys Ginza. We don't need the backstory of like, you know, well, what is he? Is he a dinosaur? We don't know. But with this, okay, a manufactured drug from, I guess, South Korea, you know, and some criminal organization wants it and wants to distribute it, I guess. But I mean, the thing I still don't really get is, okay, you're feeding it to your slaves that you kill, but you don't really get much of a sense. You just get the sense that they're getting high. You're not getting a sense, I kept thinking to myself that the one guy that they pull out before they kill him, that like, he's like a crumpled mess, and then he turns into the Joker after he's snorted or sucked up some of the pop rocks that, are about to go into Scarlett Johansson's tummy. And I was expecting him to, like, get up and basically turn into C-3PO and just be like, oh, well, hello, Lucy. My name is Rick. I'm gonna be your bunkmate in Korean Gary Oldman's cellar for the
He
next
really does
10
look like
years.
Gary Oldman. He really does. He looks like Gary Oldman in that, like, the hallway scene. Of course, in another Luc Besson film, Leon the Professional. He looks
Yep.
like Gary Oldman in that scene.
Well, and I feel like, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I actually like that actor. I feel like I've seen him in something.
I mean, he's the one believable performance in that, as, like, drug lord, angry Korean man.
Except when he's listening to classical music and he's got the cucumbers on his face and he's just like, and you're like, whoa, dude, this isn't a Clockwork Orange. Like,
God, I hate that movie too.
don't go ham because you're listening to Ludwig Vaughn. I could tell a personal story for that one, but tune into the net personal stories next week. Good little tie-in there. I'm surprised I didn't tell that story, but I'm also kind of glad I didn't. Anyway, yeah, and the whole time in the first, I forgot how much of the first half of the movie it takes place, but the fact that, you do have Morgan Freeman doing all of his narration about the human brain does this, that, and the other, and you're just like,
God, those scenes are so bad.
it's, and this is
All the
my.
foreign accented people asking him very stilted, very pointed questions that are clearly no one would actually ask in a lecture like that.
Well,
Sir, what happens if this one specific incident happens to the person that you are talking about? Sir, what the fuck is that direction?
I just, well, the whole presentation of
I
it.
realized that my mic was not on this entire fucking time.
Oh, wow. Okay. How does it sound now?
Well, my mic is on. I don't know. I
I
don't
get a
know what.
weird feeling that that's gonna. Anyway, doesn't matter. Episode 199's already been scheduled, so it doesn't matter. all 3 hours of it.
God.
Spoilers. But no, the point I'm getting at is when it comes to Morgan Freeman in this movie, and it goes back to my complaints about, all the intercuts with the B-roll from whatever David Attenborough documentary that they used for this. It's like Luc Besson's wanting to try and remind you of like a Discovery Channel or whatever BBC One documentary where you would see all these animals and Morgan Freeman would be like, the penguins are about to be eaten by the mighty cheetah. Or, and I know they don't exist together. I'm just making a bad example, but
In
like, you
this
get my
movie, they
point.
probably would exist
In
together.
Luc Besson's world, they would. But it's so pretentious where it's like, okay, I get what you're trying to do with that. But then you've got like this cyberpunk, bloody, like Grand Theft Auto adjacent story that is literally turning into the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey. And these are all things that just don't go together. And in a lot of ways, I made a joke about it when I sent that audio to you guys, when they show Lucy the hominid that lived millions of years ago, that, at the time when her bones were discovered, the fossils were discovered of Lucy, she was, basically the oldest human ancestor discovered at that point in time. And, there is sort of that dorky part of my brain that likes that because, having grown up being somebody obsessed with, evolution and dinosaurs and, the evolution of mankind And at some point, Australopithecus comes up, and then Lucy comes up because she was an Australopithecus. And, you know, the whole story about her being found in Ethiopia and how the, I guess, the paleontologists that found her were listening. They found her, they didn't know immediately what to name her, and they had the radio on, or they had a cassette playing, and it was Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds by the Beatles. So that's a story that I know about that I enjoy. And, you know, we saw the recreation of her bones at the Natural History Museum in LA. And it's fine incorporating that, and I get that you're trying to make a point about human intelligence. But then we get to that point at the end of the movie when Scarlett Johansson is just changing the channels through history, where it's old New York City, and then it's prehistoric, and then she's like, nah, I'm gonna go a little bit to the future. And she's somehow not in New York. I guess she's in Ethiopia, or at the very least, prehistoric Ethiopia, and meets Lucy. You know, it's just pretentiousness to. The irony of this movie is that it's all about going to the nth degree of human intelligence, and then this movie goes to the nth degree of pretentiousness instead.
There is no intelligence. Dropping my mic now. There is no intelligence behind this movie. My question, Ryan, is there, do you think that there's any like merit or saving grace or anything that this film did right? I think for me, like it had the beginnings of a potentially interesting like action movie, and it shit that all away the second that she floats off the floor. Like I remember watching it in the theater. Like I knew what this movie was about, that she like gets powers or whatever, and I'd heard about that scene. But when I saw it, it was just like, oh, I'm fully checking out right now. My brain is off, and I'm just fully done with this movie. But like up to that point, I think you had the beginnings of a decent action movie. And you decided to go that direction instead. So that was the merits that it had. It like it brought you in up to a point.
I think, in a weird way, the scene, because I remember they showed her in the cell when she's, you know, moving up the walls and she's on the ceiling. They showed that in the trailers, and I remember liking that. But when I
Ew.
rewatched it, I still liked that part. And the only reason for that is, to me, number one, I had forgotten just how bonkers this movie went with the whole, you know, oh, I could just use the force to have all of the
And then she just
K-pop.
doesn't throughout the movie. She just decides not to.
Oh, hey, K-pop guys, you're gonna shoot me? And I mean, in the hallway scene, I mean, I'm just sitting there watching that scene, and I'm like, okay, I'm really tired of these hallway scenes with people that are basically Jedi. Like, I. Once was enough with Darth Vader in Rogue One, and I still love that scene,
Oh,
but
it's an excellent scene.
for goodness sake, everyone has to do it. The only other time I'll tolerate it, and this will come as no surprise, if I like it when Darth Vader does it, naturally the other person I like to see do it is Pattinson's hallway scene in The Batman, where it's in the dark and all you see is the gunfire and him just brutalizing Carmine Falcone's thugs. But when she's in the cell and she's floating around, and you know, you can tell they're just using some like kind of orbital set to give off that effect, which I like seeing that in movies. I fall for it. I like it when they do it in Inception. They did it in 2001, A Space Odyssey. I liked that as the kind of over-the-top origin for how she gets her powers. It's just that everything after that just goes further than that scene when it doesn't need to, if that makes sense. Like,
Yeah.
they needed it to be a little bit more subtle, and she needed to dial down the Sherlock Holmes, Sheldon Cooper, and I say this, you know, with all due respect, but like the borderline, like, you know, I'm a very smart person with Asperger's, and I'm gonna be your doctor today because I am a surgeon. I am a surgeon. And it's like, no, you don't need to do that. You really don't need to do that at all. We don't need a character that's like that, where it just turns into, you know, oh, your kidneys are failing, you need to change your lifestyle and eat organic. Like,
I forgot about that scene.
I mean, that part just made me cringe so bad, just because, you know, I've seen, they've done that in Doctor Who so many times, and it's funnier in Doctor Who because it's a beloved actor doing it. You know, when Christopher Eccleston or Peter Capaldi or Matt Smith do it, it is funny. Because they're either deliberately playing it for laughs, or they're so serious it's funny, especially if it's Peter Capaldi doing it. But when Scarlett Johansson's doing it, I don't feel anything. You know, and this has nothing to do with, you know, honestly, like, there's not, I couldn't tell you a Scarlett Johansson movie that I like. But I don't know. It goes so off the rails. And then the one scene that I knew I wanted to talk about with you over everything else was, because I have kind of a love-hate relationship with this one particular scene, and you might have an idea where I'm going with. It's the scene on the airplane. We need to talk about that. Before we wrap up or do anything, I feel like we need to talk about that because on one hand, I liked probably 80% of the execution of that scene. But when she started turning into sprinkles that you put on a cake or a cupcake, I'm like, what the living hell am I watching? Like, her face turns into,
Her
what is it,
face turns into
Jimmy's?
silly putty.
Yeah. I mean, come on. What's the
And then
deal?
she like pours out the drugs in her hand and like scar. You can hear him like,
Oh.
you can hear her like chewing, and it's
All
like,
the pop rocks. Yes, good. Feed Black Widow all the pop rocks.
and then she, and then it doesn't explain what happens after that. She like either turns into like energy or more sprinkles. But somehow she ends up in the hospital and they know who she is and she's back to her normal hair. Like, did she like phase out of the plane or did she not? Where did she go? What happened?
You got me?
Why is she not in like protective custody, really? She's just in the hospital. And
Well, she's
they kind of like,
handcuffed. And then the
I
French
mean, I
guys are like, you know,
guess.
oh, I thought you had her in custody. She was. I don't know why she's walking around, you know.
Why
I'm
is there
just
no one
turning
like
to.
there to observe and monitor and guard?
Yeah.
Like, yo.
I just. And I think it's just. There's like a. There's a smugness with that scene. Because she's clearly sitting in the middle of two airplane seats, which I can't think of a more uncomfortable way to sit on a plane. Like, what are you? And I'll find out in a few days what that's like, but damn. And she's got the two laptops. And there's like nothing on the laptops other than, oh, data. Oh, it's the Matrix, but a cheaper effect. And then, you know, she starts falling. And this is where it starts to be something that I like, where she's starting to fall apart. The big downside to it is just the fact that it's all digital. So, you know, it obviously it would have looked hammy if they somehow made it all practical and it started looking like something at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Had it been like that, though, I would have been intrigued, but c'est la vie. Or as the French would say, c'est la vie. But then, you know, and then she gets into the bathroom, and at one point she flings the one guy, the one flight attendant, and then she gets inside and her face starts falling apart, and then it turns into like Poltergeist. But like I said, it's that point where, like, she just goes overboard, and you can just see the inside of her flesh and her skin turning into rainbow, like literally looking like sprinkles. I thought for a second, is Jared Leto's Joker about to show up? Like, what kind of buffoonery is happening? You know, is she in some dream? Has she been hit by Cesar Romero's Joker's, like, laughing gas? Like, what? So, I don't know. And even just the beginning, with her being, I guess, kind of like, I guess she's supposed to be kind of dumb and ditzy, but then she's with the guy with
He's
the.
allegedly a university student studying in, like, what is it, Taipei or Taiwan or something?
I don't know.
Because she like at the beginning she doesn't want to do the stupid drop off because I have to go study, I have
Yeah.
exams.
And
But oh, whatever.
the guy she's working with, it's like I'm tired of this like
Pilaf Asbake.
what?
That's his name. It's Pilaf Asbake or Pilu Asbake.
Pete,
Pilu
what?
asks, he's in Game of Thrones.
Trying to
It's
find.
something
Oh,
Greyjoy.
I thought you said pilaf ass bake,
I
and
think
I'm
I did. It's
like,
Pilu. It's Pilu.
oh, I've seen. Oh, you're on Greyjoy. That's right. Huh. Okay. Well, and then there's the one red-haired guy that shows up that I don't even think ever shows up again in the movie. He's like the guy, the kind of explainer guy at the beginning. Julian Rind Tutte, who. No pun intended for what I'm about to say. But at one point in time, his name was floated around for the 12th Doctor in Doctor Who, to which a lot of Doctor Who fans thought, oh my god, are we finally about to get our first Ginger Doctor? Because they've already twice pulled the rug out from under us where, a doctor's been like, oh, I'm not Ginger, I'm not Ginger. Here's our chance. And instead, it turned into an angry Scotsman. So, yeah, I just.
I think for me, just something that demonstrates that humanity doesn't have faith and we don't know what to do with life is that some people on IMDb rated this movie 10 out of 10.
Yeah, no. That's bad. That's not good at all. Oh my God.
It's, yeah. I doubt your taste in cinema if you rate this a 10 out of 10. I give it a 3 out of 10. No, not even. I give it a 2 out of 10, honestly. It's not bad enough for a 1, just again because the beginning is kind of enjoyable. It's a
Yeah.
2 out of 10. I don't think I've ever seen a 1 out of 10 movie. It's a 2 out of 10.
Well, my last question to you, and then we'll hop off. Of the three movies we've seen, and I like to think we've picked a very varied set of movies that are all in their own ways really horrible. If you had to give grades, what did you say for this one? You said 2 or 3
Two.
out of 10.
I give it a 2.
Okay, that's I'd probably give it a 2 out of 10 also. So first off, two-parter. Out of 10, what would you give Man of Steel and Exorcist 2? And how would you rank these three movies?
Man of Steel, I would still give it. I mean, I enjoyed Man of Steel, so I give it a 7.5 out of 10. It had its issues. I still really liked it. I thought it was a good, more realistic and grounded take on what it'd be like to have Superman in the modern era. Exorcist, I give that a 3 out of 10.
Oh, you're being too nice.
Because no, I'm giving it a 3 out of 10 because this one has to be a 2 out of 10, right? That's why.
I think if I had to rank these three and also give them numbers out of 10, I would probably put and I don't know, maybe to you I might sound sacrilegious, but I would put Man of Steel and Lucy both at a 2 out of 10.
Ew.
I really don't like Man of Steel,
But
and
to put it on the level of Lucy?
to me, it's the same kind of just
At
dumb.
least the story was coherent.
It is, but the execution and the portrayal of the
Okay.
character,
Okay.
it's going off in these dir like look, in hindsight. Like, we have the beauty of hindsight and the fact that we've now had multiple Supermen. We're about to get a new one. But. And whether or not I see the new one, I don't really care. But, it brought the character down for me. And, you know, personally, like, as much as I can look at the Christopher Reeve Superman movies for what they are, you know, I'm also the jaded type. So, you know, when I read The Dark Knight Returns, I'm rooting for Batman to kick Superman's ass. Granted, that's also because Superman's an employee of Ronald Reagan's, just like Oliver North. But no, I would give both of those movies 2 out of 10, and Exorcist 2 easily. I mean, I would put it below a 1 out of 10, but that's Exorcist 2 is just foul. I mean, just believe me, I almost would put Lucy and Exorcist 2 on the same level, but Exorcist 2 just bastardizes the mythology and what was set up in the first movie so much, and is so disrespectful to the legacy of that first movie that, and on top of that, really set a bad precedent for the rest of the movies in the franchise, but also
It also didn't even
hampered.
use tubular bells.
Yeah, and it hampered the success of Exorcist 3, which I've been on record multiple times on this show and just in life in general, where I'm like, I think that's an underrated masterpiece. Like the third movie, and that one does use tubular bells for one point, but they're also trying to make it clear, like, yes, this is a sequel to The Exorcist, but we're also giving you something that's very different and very dark and very unlike the first movie. So if that movie had done better, you know, who knows? Exorcist 3 could have been a very different film. But yeah, that's where I'd rank these three, and it makes me wonder, what kind of world it would have been had we seen Steel instead, since that was
Oh,
on the
God.
list. Hey. Hey. Wags his finger.
I've never seen Steel, so.
Don't look at my rubbery metal suit. Like, it just jangles. It's like
Oh,
flaps.
jangles.
It's so bad, and it's like you're supposed to be wearing, you're basically wearing Iron Man armor, and it's jiggling off your melon, Shaquille. You know, so. Well, Matt, we've completed the mediocre movie trilogy. Who knows, maybe one day in the future we'll do The Room as well. Yeah.
That's a monster in itself.
Oh yeah. But given the fact that we've got a little bit of time until the finale, this won't be technically the last bad movie that we talk about for the season. Stay tuned for in a couple episodes for that beauty. But until then, dear listeners, get ready for the final three. This has been one episode 197 of Mars on Life. We got three more to go. See you soon.
Mars on Life is a podcast co-hosted by Sebastian Shug, Ryan Mancini, Andrew Martinez, and Matt Fernandez. If you like this episode, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite shows, as Mars on Life is available on Anchor, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Audible, Spotify, and Podchaser. Find us on Instagram at Mars on Life Show to keep up with the latest news, episodes, and gratuitous updates on the Red Planet. Have a question, comment, or request? Email us at marsonlife@gmail.com, and we'll promptly get back to you. This show's artwork, titled Happy Mars, was drawn by Zachary Erbrick. Our show's regular intro and outro music is Space Explorers by the one and only Kevin MacLeod. Thank you for listening, and always remember, if you keep going, you'll make it to Mars.